Stay safe on the roads with Rain-X Vision Beam Wiper Blades. Now at Menards. For over 40 years, Rain-X has provided drivers with products to outsmart the elements. Their Vision Beam Wiper Blades are easy to install and are designed to provide a smooth, streak-free wipe every time. Save big money on all Rain-X products now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius Germanicus is here, and we're going to play a fun game, which is to look at the American Empire built upon the foundations of the Roman Empire. And it so happened at the end of the 4th century A.D., 395, I believe is the date, a man named Theodosius was emperor at Ravenna. Ravenna was the capital, the effective capital at the time. Rome was no longer commodious. Milan was a large city, but Ravenna was on the Adriatic and useful way of communicating to both sides of the empire. And Theodosius knew he was going to die, so he chose his two sons to be emperors, one for the east and one for the west. And they were young, and so they had protectors and generals and led to civil war, of course. That's not what we're pursuing. What we're pursuing is that the beginning of the division of the empire quickly turned into ideas in the 4th century. And the ideas had to do with a man named Constantine, who had a vision. But it was a practical vision that the Christians were no longer his enemy. I mean, he was signing up the people who were winning. Good for him. And a few years later, he founded the city of Constantinople. 330, I believe, is the date that everybody agrees upon. That became the empire's capital in the east. But really, what we know to be true is that it was dominated by the Greek language, and it became the Roman Empire for the next. Well, what is that? That's the 4th century until today. So, but really until the 15th century. And therefore, by analogy, we have to entertain the fact that the American Empire has outgrown the usefulness of D.C. Right now, D.C. is much troubled by a population that is restive and bypassed. I picked up a detail, Germanicus. The Army Navy Club, which is downtown Washington, you know it well. It's a lovely place. It's forever 1958, and Eisenhower's recovered from his heart attack. That's what the Army Navy Club is like. It doesn't burden you with the digital universe. It's still telephones and messages to each other, letters writing. But in any event, the Army Navy Club has a possibility that if you're a member and you lose your job, you can ask to have your fees for a period of time. And that's going on now, I hear. And that's because of the furloughs, layoffs, whatever you call them, of the federal workforce. The federal workforce is shrinking. And there's grave concern that a lot of people are losing their jobs. I'm thinking D.C. is going to lose its capital status. So where in the world do we put the new capital? Where does Constantine think we need help? Your turn, Germanicus.
Well, the first question we should ask is, why did Rome get abandoned? Why did the imperial institution leave Rome? And why did they end up in Constantinople? And that has to do with a series of crises and disasters in the 3rd century, which essentially showed Rome to be indefensible. So the choice of Constantinople was in part due to the obvious insecurity of Rome. I mean, Aurelian built a whole set of strong walls around Rome, but that didn't mean that Rome would be able to survive a real attack. And of course, that was shown to be true often. But in spite of the fact that Belisarius, 3 centuries later, was able to defend it against the Ostrogoths. But ultimately, there was another reason, and that was that the center of the imperial economy, the real heart of the Roman Empire had moved east. There had been a significant shift. And so to find a new capital that would be closer to the heart of the real empire and also be impregnable was, I think, in large part the nexus for the decision. And this was borne out in history. And in fact, the Roman Empire in the West abandoned Rome as well and moved after Trier up in Germany when the Western Empire was still successfully defending its frontiers. It moved to Ravenna, and Ravenna was kind of a poor man's Constantinople. It was also impregnable. And the sense I would have about the U.S. today is that we need to wait for a larger transformation in American life that I think is ongoing. And what you suggest really is supported by subterranean data about the change in the nature of the American identity. And if, as is suggested metaphorically by Mr. Trump's focus on Venezuela, which actually goes back to 19th century issues about territorial disputes between Venezuela and Guyana. But ultimately, if in fact the influx of Hispanics into the U.S., and the, on one hand, and the desire of the U.S. to create an America first that is founded on a kind of hemispheric identity, that would tend to indicate that we would want to potentially at some point move the capital to a place that would help to cement North and South America. And of course, we have such a place, and you have suggested it, and that would be Miami. Miami is already the kind of entrepot and nexus for not just the Caribbean, but all of the world surrounding it, you know, the world of, you might call it the Bolivarian Mexicano world. And I would imagine that that would be an alternative that would help to cement a new kind of hemispheric identity. I'm not sure that is necessarily going to happen. But I do want to remind that if we ever move the capital, it will be only because the nature of American identity has dramatically transformed, and that the scope of the new identity in which a capital is a critical symbol, capital city becomes a critical symbol, has yet to happen, but that's the way in which we would know that this is the path that we are on. Because remember, why Washington, D.C. did not exist. There was Alexandria, Virginia, quite an old colonial town, but Washington itself was a completely self-conscious creation, just as Constantinople was back in the early 4th century. Washington, D.C. was really the midway point between the northern and southern colonies. And those colonies needed a place that was not favoring the North or the South, because the capital had briefly been under the Articles of Confederation, first in Philadelphia and then in New York briefly, but that wasn't going to work. And of course, by putting the capital on the Potomac, it actually helped to increase the influence of Virginia. And Virginia was the dominant force in American politics up until the rise of Andrew Jackson. And the first party system was completely dominated by Virginia presidents. So that has an element of importance as well. So I would, if I wanted to range, as they say, broad and free, I would say that the important shift in American migration now is less that of, say, Hispanics and others coming into America, and more the migration of Northerners into the South. And the states that have been so powerfully increased in strength by this migration are, of course, Texas and Florida. And Florida is becoming a kind of mecca for Northerners, as it has been for some time. But I think in an accelerating way now, it is becoming a kind of locus. And at the same time, you know, as I said earlier, Miami is really a kind of connective terminus for the world of Latin America and the United States. So yeah, you could come up with an alternative future narrative in which there was a shift. And the point you were making about Washington, D.C. being so corrupted and by implication, and also so steeped in a different kind of paradigm, which was the paradigm for the last 70 or 80 years of an American world empire and a globalized America. If there was a big transformative change to a more hemispheric, and again, you know, very traditional vision of the American space, with outliers, of course, you know, Australia, Japan, Korea, the Azores, Greenland, all that. But it would be appropriate for this new identity to be centered in a place where North and South met, just the way Washington, D.C. originally, in the end of the 18th century, was centered as a place where North and South met.
And Mar-a-Lago is the new White House?
Mar-a-Lago is like, and I was there, not at Mar-a-Lago, I was there at Diocletian's great palace and mausoleum in Spalato, or Split. And I think Mar-a-Lago will occupy a place in the new imperial institution somewhat similar to that. But it's not about Mar-a-Lago, except in memorializing. But I do think that for the future, we need to keep foremost in our minds this connection between the Norte Americanos, you know, El Norte, and the alliance that we have in our future identity with the, you know, Latin America, as they say.
All eyes October 26th, next Sunday, the vote in Argentina. All eyes on Caracas. Mm-hmm. I'm told the opposition is extremely encouraged, and the president means to win this. All eyes especially on Bogota, because Petro's out of control. And when Caracas falls to its opposition, Bogota will be tumbling afterwards. Lula da Silva is acting mighty disposed towards Washington these days. As the rest of the continent, I understand. Well, we can anticipate 1 billion people in the two continents sometime around the 22nd century. Mm-hmm. As the population shrinks in other parts of the world because of inadequate health care, and also inability to industrialize. America would become not just a fortress, but a startup, a place to go to start things up. And we could also have a hemispheric vote. We can imagine that. A president from any one of the republics. However, too far into the future, the Centurions are restless. We're good, guys. Thanks. Germanicus is Michael Vlahos. I am John Batchelor. We're off to Sacrifice to Augustus. And then we're going to the theater and we're promised a new production tonight. Now, Romans like their comedy extremely simple-minded. So I hope there's none of that irony stuff that the Greeks, excuse me, Germanicus, that the Greek irony is often burdensome for me when I'm sitting trying to laugh. We'll see if they keep it out of the production tonight. This is the Friends of History Debating Society in Londinium Live. Thank you.